me jealous? No.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
No. I'm not jealous. This is Too Wretched for Radio. Phil, are you ready to dive into your mailbag because you're getting more emails than I am? This does not make me bitter. I'm not jealous in any regard, but we did set up an email just for you, so I don't have to go through all of your emails. Phil@wretched.org. Phil@wretched.org. Phil, I will deliver these as the non-bitter, non-jealous person that I am. Are you prepared for your mailbag, sir?
Yes, though I don't know how you could be jealous about the volume of angry mail I get, but okay.
Well, it does sometimes skew in that direction. Hey, you know, speaking of which, Phil, now, do you ever desire to wound a Christian brother and sister? I mean, unintentionally or just by being thoughtless. Do you ever desire to do that?
Well, not consciously. I think there are times, surely, when I let my carnal attitudes get the best of me. And if I respond too quickly, some things I say may come out, you know, too sharply barbed. I think that's one of the fleshly tendencies that I have to mortify more than any other. I have a sharp tongue. I know it.
Okay, see, because I'm thinking about the number of emails that were, first of all, I will say this, Phil. We received a lot of response from anti-vaxxer people who listen to Too Wretched for Radio. And I will get, look, I think we concluded we disagree with their conclusion, but not one of them was snarky. They disagreed. They sent long, detailed emails, but not one of them was snarky. So I say props to that. But Phil, it seemed like, and I don't recall this when you and I talked about it, because I know some people who are anti-vaxxers. It wasn't my intention to upset somebody unnecessarily. And I don't think that you sounded shrill either.
No, in fact, I listened to that with an ear for that, because when I told Darlene we had dealt with that subject, she reminded me that some dear friends of ours are anti-vaxxers. Yeah. And I thought, oh, I hope I didn't say anything that they think I'm targeting them, you know. So I listened to it. I thought, you know, I can see why people would disagree with what we said, but I don't really see how anybody could righteously say that we were cruel or unkind or deliberately snarky. I sort of bent over backwards not to be.
All right, and so I'll even take it another step. And if I was, I can't speak for you, Phil. If I was, I'm sorry, that wasn't the intention. It was just trying to deal with the issue. It wasn't an intentional toe stepping, that's for certain. And I'm pretty sure you feel the same.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. In fact, I got some personal emails from people who listened to that episode and said, you know, you really ought to read this before you opine on that subject. And they sent me material to read.
Right.
And
yeah.
I thanked them for the material. None of it changed my mind on what I said, but I'm certainly willing to look at the facts and listen to the arguments and, you know, give them credibility.
Yep, me too. So the intention here is never to wound a brother or sister. Now, you'll light it up and maybe aim some pointed arrows at heresy and heretics, will you not, Mr. Johnson?
Yes, I will. If I think someone's being deceptive or, you know, we dealt with Mark Driscoll the other day, and I think, you know, I probably said some harsh things there that would be harsher than I would say in a normal disagreement. But after, you know, 15 years of watching the Driscoll shenanigans, I think there are, scripture even acknowledges that there are people who need to be rebuked sharply.
All right, but never aimed at a brother or sister for the sake of just winning an argument or just pounding somebody down. Never desire to do that, but there are different rules for false teachers and false teachings. It's a different game. When you're talking about somebody who's outside of orthodoxy, well, that doesn't mean that there are no rules. But the rules are different.
That's exactly right. In fact, you read 2 John and, well, read scripture. And one of the qualifications to be an elder, a leader in the church, is you have to be hospitable. And yet, in 2 John, the apostle John, the apostle of love, says, if someone comes to you with a different doctrine in the name of Christ, he's talking about someone who has totally corrupted the gospel or has a totally different view on the person of Christ and who he is. Someone who's so far off that what they're offering is a different version, a different gospel, like Paul says, let him be accursed. John says, don't let him in your house. Don't even give him a greeting.
I am Googling if Paul had written Galatians today. Do you remember that satire, Phil?
No.
This is before Babylon B. Let's see if I can find this. If Paul had written Galatians today, basically no Christian, Tyndale or Zondervan, wouldn't publish it.
Yeah.
Because it was too mean, it was too judgmental, and nobody would pick the thing up. Christianity Today would have a field day with it. They would say that he's just the meanest man since, well, like Phil Johnson or something. I can't find it, but it was exactly spot on satire. Paul's words were sharp, and what motivates sharp talking about false teaching is not that we're just, we're so much better, and they're so dumb with their... Look, this is an assault on God's truth and God's character, and that should cause some ire on our end. If we're never hot about anything, something isn't quite right.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be our constant temperature, but it should at least be on the range and the spectrum of emotions we have. All right, Phil, let's get to your mailbag. Don't forget, send your emails in the future to him, Phil@wretched.org. Because remember, I'm not jealous or bitter. Here we go, Phil. This is sent in a very fair question. Because I'm telling you, Phil, we need to figure out where the good men are. This is from a young lady. I'll keep her name out of it just because. Asking the question, is it practical or a lack of faith in God's provision and providence for young people to leave a good church and look for another in order to find a spouse? I get that, Phil. Let's say you go to a church. It's a good church, 100 people. You're hoping to find your spouse there because wouldn't that be sweet if you both believe the same thing? Family, church, all of how cool would that be? And there's nobody there. Down the street, there's still a theologically sound church, and it's a 7,000-member place, and there's a bigger harvest field. Is that a reason to leave your church?
Well, it's not a great reason to leave a church. I, like you, I understand the sentiment. I remember what it was like to be 20 years old and wondering, am I ever going to meet my spouse? Yeah, well, barely. But I do remember this, and I remember thinking, you know, well, how will I even know when I meet the right girl and all that? And so I went through all of that angst that people tend to go through at that age, and I'm sympathetic to the concern. But when people ask me, you know, where should I go to church? How do I decide whether to stay or leave at my church? My answer is you should find the church in your community where you are most well taught and well used in terms of your spiritual gifts, where you can plug in and minister and be ministered to by good teaching. And that's what should keep you there, not concerns about who your friends are or whether you fit into the age group or whatever. Look for the place where you're going to be edified spiritually. And then as far as your potential spouse is concerned, pray. If you don't believe the Lord has enough power to bring the right person into your life, when you put yourself in the best possible context to serve him and glorify him, not as someone merely looking for a spouse, but someone who wants to edify and be edified with other Christians, the Lord is powerful enough to bring the right person into your life. So what you should do if you're concerned about this is devote yourself to prayer about the issue and pray chiefly that the Lord will prepare you for the person he has for you.
And Phil, if nothing else, there's eharmony.com. So it's not like you're completely cut off from everybody and anyone. Do you like the eHarmony or the Christian Tingle Mingle business?
Well, it's not.
Are you okay with that stuff?
It's not my favorite thing, but I used to be more critical of it than I am because I know several people who met their spouses that way, who are happily married and serving the Lord together. And it's possible that the Lord will use that to bring some people together. So I don't see any sin in it. I think it is fraught with more potential dangers than if you meet your spouse, you know, face to face before you form this imaginary idea of who this is just based on online context, because I, you know, in the years I've been on the internet since 1995, I've met dozens of people who I knew on the internet first and then finally met face to face. And almost never do they turn out to be what you exactly expect. So it's a dangerous way, a potentially dangerous way, I think, to look for a spouse. But again, I do know several people who've successfully found a mate through some of the online services. So I wouldn't say it's wrong.
Phil Johnson, you are getting soft. Sometimes people will ask, has Phil ever backed down on anything? And now I can say yes on eHarmony.com.
Yeah, there
Phil
you go.
Phil has changed his position on Christian dating services. You know, I don't have a problem with it either. And could it be, you know, the question this young lady asks, could it be an issue of not trusting God's provision and providence? And the answer is, yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
But having said that, that doesn't mean that you can't use the means that God allows or provides to expand your search. It doesn't necessarily mean a lack of faith. I have to confess, maybe it's because I kind of think that at least the eHarmony one is kind of a brilliant concept, even though it's got some psychological principles behind it. I think it's got some wisdom behind it. I think it should be without stigma, in my estimation. You better be safe when you do it and put all of those bumpers around it to make sure that you don't find yourself in a bad situation. I look at it as a provision from God. You know, where are you right now, Phil?
I am in the Canadian Rockies.
Yeah. Population what?
Very sparse.
See? eHarmony.com works in the Canadian Rockies, too. That's my point right there.
Yeah.
All right. Phil, I want to go back, though, however. You brought something up about, because the issue of leaving a church, it is a monstrously big issue for people. I mean, a lot of people wrangle with it. You just said you should be in the church in your town with the best teaching where you can be fed and where you can serve. Let me break that down, James Brown. Let's just say I'm in a good church and the preaching is sound, Bible teach, Sunday school, all of that is good. There's no opportunities for me to serve. Is that a reason for me to leave the church?
Well, no, and certainly not as a reflexive response. You need to look for an opportunity to serve or make one. It would be a rare church that would say to someone who is gifted to do something or interested in doing something, no, we don't want you involved in our ministry. Most churches...
Well, you know what? It actually can happen. I've seen it happen where somebody is, you know, they're gifted at teaching, but hey, look, all the teaching positions are filled. You know, bring it down to, I want to help out with the ground screw. You know, we've really got somebody who handles that. That's their thing. I mean, it could happen.
Oh, yeah, it does. In fact, especially if you want to start in a teaching role, that's not the place to start serving in a church because...
Interesting.
Scripture tells us, you know, not many of you should desire to be teachers. And also, church leaders should not lay hands on someone too quickly, meaning don't give someone a position of leadership or eldership or a teaching role until you actually know who they are and what they believe. That's not the place to start serving. I was at Grace Church for 11 years before I ever spoke to a group of adults larger than my own living room Bible study. So now I occasionally fill in when John MacArthur's not in the pulpit. They after they got to know me, they actually let me preach a few times. But I was happy to serve in any role for 11 years before I ever taught.
All right, can I argue like a liberal for just a moment? Do you mind if I do that?
No, I don't mind. I'll argue against your liberalism.
Yeah, so you hate women.
No, I don't.
All right, moving on to our email sent to phil@wretched.org. phil@wretched.org. How do you respond to someone who says, forgiving student loan debt is like the year of Jubilee? Well, that's an interesting one. Talk about arguing like a liberal. What say you, Phil?
Well, it isn't anything like the year of Jubilee. The year of Jubilee... things were returned to you that belonged to your family by heritage. So in essence, if you own property, for example, you weren't permitted to sell that property permanently. You could sell it to someone until the year of Jubilee, and then it reverted back to you. So it was more like a long-term lease than it was an actual sale. But that was to preserve and guard the inheritance for families. It was really a very wise provision. But only what was yours went back to you. It wasn't that every debt you had was forgiven. You still had to pay your actual debts.
And not to mention, so there's that issue. We're also not Israel under that covenant at that time. That was a provision for them.
That's right.
And Phil, it really, like you said, it's for the stabilization of the nation. I was just talking to somebody who lives on a farm, grew up on the farm, and he mentioned this casually, not intending to comment at all on Old Testament laws, but he said when the parents died, I'm making up the number, they had 200 acres, and the five kids got involved, and everybody ended up getting 40 acres without a mule, and now the whole thing is just, it's not a productive farm. No, because it's too. It all got broken up, and the family doesn't own it anymore. And I went, that is why, as archaic as it sounds today, the elder got, typically, the firstborn, if right. you will, got the farm to keep it in the family so that the whole family was stable and secure as opposed to getting it all busted up. I thought, there's the brilliance of God again.
Yep, that's right.
All right, so it's not the same thing. Phil, I would be interested to hear your take on R.C. Sproul's openness to women preaching on occasion, but without an authoritative title or position. First of all, is that a fair representation of R.C. Sproul's opinion?
Well, I don't know, actually. I don't know that I ever heard him say one way or the other on that. I can't imagine, though, that he would think, yeah, giving a woman a teaching role in the church, as long as she doesn't have a title, that's okay. I don't think that's what he was saying. I think he may have followed the policy that it's okay to let a woman speak in a different kind of gathering, a conference or whatever. There are people who hold that view. I'm a little more conservative on that. I think when Paul says, I don't permit a woman to teach or usurp authority over man, he's talking specifically about the context of a gathered church. In my view, that would apply to a conference as well. And it's that she cannot teach or usurp authority over man. And the word usurp is, of course, in the King James. It really isn't that she took authority that wasn't given to her. He's saying, I don't allow her to have authority over a man. Men are supposed to be in leadership in the church. That's the way God ordained it. And also in the family. And when you overturn or overthrow that structure, it leads to all kinds of problems. We see that in our culture at large. And it amazes me that Christians who watch what's happened in amongst radical feminists, there are still Christians in the church who think, yeah, these would be good ideas to import into the church as well. If that's what Sproul held to, I wouldn't agree with him on that.
But you know what, though? Phil, Ligonier conferences. Did a woman ever preach at a Ligonier conference? I don't recall that.
I don't remember an instance like that, but I didn't get to go to a lot of Ligonier conferences. I would love to have gone to more than I did. I think there were women speakers in some of the breakout sessions and things like that. Same thing at G3.
Okay. All right.
I think you can get too pedantic about that, and so I wouldn't necessarily criticize Sproul if he had a woman speaking in one of the breakout sessions. But if I were the one organizing the sessions, I don't think I would do that.
You know, speaking of G3, I don't know if you heard about this newcomer, John MacArthur. I hear he's a whip-snapping preacher. He's going to be at the G3 conference. Did you hear about that?
I heard about that. We'll see.
Whip-cracking? What did I call his preach? At any rate, John MacArthur is actually going to be at the G3 conference.
Yes, he is.
That should be a hoot. I don't know if he actually contacted me. He wants to stay at our place. So I'm not sure we can accommodate that, but we'll see what we can do for that John MacArthur feller. And Phil, I get to be with you and John MacArthur at the Truth Conference in October. I presume it's still sold out in the inside the building, but you can get tickets in the
actually,
other buildings?
Actually, even the overflow are now sold out. We have a waiting list because there are always people who cancel at the last minute and can't come. And it is going to be live streamed, so I think everybody will get to see it. Truth Matters, I think that's October. It's the week of October 18th. I should know the exact dates, but I don't off the top of my head.
And guess who I get to interview?
Anyone you want to.
John MacArthur, Vody Bachum, and Phil Johnson. I want to do Too Wretched with you at the Truth Conference. That's what I want to do. All right. Hey, help me out with this. Don't tell me exactly what, but give me a little hint. What could be something that I could explore with John MacArthur, a field where nobody has dared to engage him in? What would it be, Phil?
Oh, you know, I don't know, because people have asked him or challenged him on just about everything I can think of. So I don't know. You know, I think one of the most interesting things is that when he was in his first early years in seminary, and he was grappling with the idea that there are people who are false converts, which you talk about all the time. So it's a common interest of yours. John began to be very aware of the fact that the church is filled with people who either think they're Christians or pretend they're Christians, and they aren't. And he actually wrote one of his early research papers on Judas, which is an odd choice for a paper to do, but I actually have a copy of his paper on Judas. I'll give it to you if you like. And you should interview him on Judas and the subject of false faith.
So I'm just taking some notes here. So emotive altar calls. Okay. I think I've got my subject with Dr. MacArthur. Well, that I'm afraid that's been the source of an awful lot of those false converts, Phil.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Are You a Rotten Fish? The last booklet, I think, that I wrote was on that subject, because I know what I'm talking about when it comes to being a rotten fish. I was a rotten fish. I was a false convert.
Yeah.
And it's not like we're the judge of somebody's soul, but we've done this enough times where we've talked to people who profess to be a believer, and you ask them the most rudimentary, fundamental questions you can imagine, and they don't know almost anything about their faith. And that should grieve us, and it should also, I think, be a cause for some self-examination. What kind of gospel are we preaching? What are we doing that is supposedly getting people saved, but only turning them into a false convert? What are we doing here? I think it's worthy of self-exploration, because, Phil, here's what I've noticed about gospel presentations. Almost every single one of them, even from, I'll do it too, they're assumptive. I assume that people understand or know something about God, theology, his laws, his nature, the cross, the deity of Jesus. I just assume those things, and you shouldn't, because people these days, they are a blank slate. They don't know as much as we assume that they do. I think that's something we need to be on guard for.
Yeah, you're right. You know, we baptize people on most Sunday nights at Grace Church, and when they're baptized, they give the testimony. And rare is the Sunday night when somebody doesn't give a testimony where you say, well, I professed conversion at age 7 or something like that. And I lived all these years not really believing in Jesus as Lord. And then I was genuinely converted in my late teens, early
20s. Happens all the time. Yeah.
It's a constant theme. And I think you're right. It's a reflection on something that's wrong with the way today's evangelicals present the gospel and invite people to respond. They settle for any kind of positive response, and it falls short of genuine faith often.
Yeah, but Phil, so much of it, it's not intentional or malicious, but you
right.
make a statement theologically, hey, look, you break God's laws, you deserve eternal damnation. Hold the phone. If you don't understand a lot about God, that is an entirely unreasonable statement. That doesn't make sense at all. It just seems so cruel. So it's a true statement, but we just need to explain why and assume nothing when we evangelize. All right, Phil, last question before your back breaks. You doing okay? You're looking a little fidgety today.
No, I'm sort of standing and leaning because I'm recording this in an unconventional way, and I don't want to get too far away from the microphone.
Oh, I thought maybe you were having some back issues.
Nope.
Oh, good. Well, then let's carry on, shall we? I'm stuck here. Speaking of church issues, I'm stuck between a mediocre church close to home, where we could be very involved, or going to a church far away, where involvement would be less, but it's a better church. My wife and I have been getting fed for years, but we get fed online by people like John MacArthur, Lawson, your name is there. So I'm more concerned about which church to best raise my children in. What say you? Okay, so okay church, where I can serve close by. Really good church at a distance where we can't serve. What do you do, Phil?
It's really impossible to give a definitive answer to that question without knowing more details, like how good is the good church and how mediocre is the mediocre one, you know? I mean, he didn't use those terms, but you get what I mean. It really depends a lot on what is it that makes that one church so much better than the other one, and is it really that much better? Generally, though, I would say you should be at a church that's close enough where you can be involved and really contribute through your own spiritual gifts and participate in the ministry. And so it depends on what is it that makes that church less than ideal. If it's a doctrinal issue, you might be worth it to drive the extra distance and maybe not be as involved as you could with a more local church. I'd have to know more. I would really have to know more.
Can I tell you, Phil, that's the best answer I think you could give. I was actually preparing, you know, gathering some emails where people have some conundrums, and it's a genuine issue. They send it, they're trying to seek some sort of input on it. And I will regularly get those emails and say, wow, I'd love to help. I truly, but I would not be serving you well if I respond with so little information. Please discuss it with your local pastor. I would actually say, look, if that church either want to talk to either or both of those pastors, get their wisdom and then make a decision, because too often we have a tendency to think, well, we can just get some, you know, I can fire off some information from, that's not wise to do that. Seek it from those two local pastors. Tell them your situation. Be honest about it. They've heard far worse than what you're going to bring to them, and let them speak some wisdom where they can ask you the questions that Phil cannot ask them. However, if you've ever got a question for Phil that he can answer, don't send it to me. I'm sorry, that just came flying right out. Please send it to phil@wretched.org, phil@wretched.org.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?